The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, this is Courtney Gaines, Malachi from Children of the Corn, Hans from the Burbs, and you're listening to Necrocasticon.
This is Captain Dallas Lee. I'm here to tell you about Adam and Eve. That's right. I'm talking about the great story of Garden of Eden. That's what you got to be talking about right now. Thank you very much.
I don't think that's actually the Adam and Eve they're talking about. I think it's more of the fun kind.
What? Talk about fun kind? That's fun to the captain. I love talking about that.
No. More of like the fun, spicy things that could probably happen in your bedroom.
Oh, spicy stuff. Spicy stuff happens in different rooms than the captain's place. That's right. Out there in the kitchen, I got me a big old mess of chili going right now. Nice and spicy. Nice and hot, too. Hot and spicy. That's what Captain likes it. You like it hot and spicy?
Well, of course I do, but not too spicy.
You can't take the heat, can you? For Adam and Eve, it's a beautiful story to tell you about right now, but you're talking about a different kind of Adam and Eve, ain't you?
I am, indeed.
Is it kind of an Adam and Eve where you can get free stuff?
Oh, it is indeed. Free stuff is awesome. Go to adamandeve.com. Enter the offer code NECRO at the checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts.
10 tentacles?
No, tantalizing.
Oh, tantalizing. My bad. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. Yes!
Both of us, my goddamn. No. It's all about the captain here. I don't worry about the other stuff there. She can worry about that on her own.
No. It's all about sharing.
Sharing? Well, I'm going to share some of that chili a little bit later on. Could also get 6 free spicy movies. Wait, spicy movies? Talk about spicy movies?
Well, I'm sure it's an Adam and Eve story, but it's going to be spicy.
Well, I like getting free stuff. The captain likes getting free stuff. We're talking about Adam and Eve. That's right. Free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. Select almost any one item for almost 50% off. Wait, what? Are you kidding me? They want 50%?
Don't forget to enter the offer code NECRO at your checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts at adamandeve.com.
Plus free shipping. That's NECRO. NECRO at adamandeve.com. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Jill Whitlow, and I'm from Night of the Creeps, and you're listening to the Necro
Casticon.
Oh boy.
That was great.
Our annual pilgrimage, Walter, to what used to be known as AuthorCon, and is now
Sci-Fi Horror Fest.
Sci-Fi Horror Fest. What was it last year?
I think it was AuthorCon.
It was AuthorCon again last year?
I think it was AuthorCon, paranormal,
yes.
Sci-fi, and horror.
And wrestling fest.
And wrestling fest, yeah. No wrestlers this year.
No wrestlers, not even Tiger.
Yeah, Tiger Smith, nowhere to be found.
Damn.
Maybe he's here tomorrow.
Well, it's been a rather interesting night. And Len Oddity did a private show for the vendors here.
Yes, he did. Yep. But, asses were stapled, and there were skewers, and all the good stuff you see in Lennon Addy's program.
Yes, we'll get into talking about a little bit more of that later on here. But welcome to Volume 5, Chapter 23 of the Necrocasticon, live from Sci-Fi Horror Fest in Oneonta, New York, where myself, Tom, and Walter,
yes,
are hanging out at the table. And saying hi to like the 6 people that walk by. So here, get this thing, man. I found out that I am moderating the paranormal panel.
You are. That's what I'm hearing. And the last time we moderated a paranormal panel. There was a little shades of controversy. I think they wanted to kill us.
Yeah, there was a little controversy there. But you know what? She's a nice lady. All right, before we get into all that, I'm going to remind you that you can sponsor the Necrocasticon. All you got to do is go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising link there, and we'll get you in touch with Armand Rosamilia. He's our big boss there, the host of the Mondo Method and Armcast. And he'll tell you how you can advertise on our podcast, like Death's Head Press has done. Yeah, and Lucas Milliron has done.
Lucas Milliron, our friend. Your friend.
Our friend,
he's
Lucas.
Our friend.
He's our friend, yes.
My meme buddy.
Your meme war.
Your sexually disgusting story buddy.
Yes. Lucas and I are working on a story right now that's just, it's so vile, we fear that our progeny's progeny will go to hell for what we wrote. Yeah. So it's a rather interesting time here. Last couple of weeks, you ain't been on the show, dude. You've been busy working.
Working, and actually, I was in the bathroom a lot.
Yeah, you were in the bathroom last week listening to the new Opeth album.
Well, I needed the album needed my attention and my patience and my concentration, so the bathroom is the best place to go.
Dan pissed in 6 Poland Spring bottles and just left them hanging around the studio.
So that's what that is.
Yeah, that's what that smell is.
Yeah. Clean up after yourself, Dan. God damn it.
God damn you, Dan. Or maybe it was Skip.
Skip smells anyways.
Like what?
I got to think for a minute. Cigars, farts, and guilt.
Yes. Cigars, farts, and guilt. So we are looking at 1, 2, 3, 4 paranormal panels. Sitting in front of us.
Right in front of us, yep. 4 tables.
4 tables of paranormal activity. We'll call it that.
Yep.
Ted Wolf, Pit Crew CNY, and Pit Crew is PITCRUNY. Paranormal and UFO experts Tim and Tom Conwell, and I don't know if they're brothers or a couple.
Or father and son.
Father and son too. And then there's Jack Kenna, not to be confused with Jack that used to bring pets on the Tonight Show.
What about the Christian comic book guy? Isn't it Jack Ketch, I think it was?
Oh, then there's Jack Ketchum.
Jack Ketchum, yes.
Yeah, not to be confused with him. Quite a few. They're gonna hate me tomorrow, Walter.
Jack Chick.
Yes, they're gonna hate me tomorrow.
Oh yeah, they're gonna hate you.
Should I have a repeat of the world's shortest and most successful ghost hunt?
Go for it.
Because you know, ghost
says, for it.
Ghost does have a new single out.
Do do be do be do 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 be do 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 be do 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 do.
Yes. Do be do be do. Ah, yeah. But Loren Malloy is here.
You know Michael Ackerfeld and Tobias Forge are collaborators and friends, right?
Yes. That's why I kept... we'll talk about this when we review the album.
Don't you dare compare Opeth to Ghost.
No, because I kept expecting to hear Tobias singing on it.
Why?
It's just... every time Ackerfeld's voice came on there, I wasn't expecting it to be so calm and sedative.
That's how... Ackerfeld's vocals are phenomenal. He sounds like Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues, in my opinion. But he can go from... if you ever see their live show, he could do more than calm and sedated. He's got a pretty mean death metal growl.
Yeah, that's what I hear. But anyway, other people that are here, David and Sherry Fairchild are here. Christian St. Pierre is here.
Yep, Christian St. Pierre, longtime friend of In Your Face Wrestling. He used to do our conventions a lot. Nice guy, good guy.
Yep.
Very talented artist.
Yep. Loren Malloy, of course.
Loren Malloy, yep.
We're sitting right next to Pamela Morris. Pamela writes supernatural mysteries.
Ah.
Yeah. And horror, too. She does it all.
Excellent.
And she's a tough biker lady. And then we have the most awesome bartender across from us. She's got that look on her face as she's counting right now. But yeah.
Counting the drawer is important.
Counting the drawer is very important. So Len Oddity. I had to walk away when he put the needle through his arm.
I was kind of disappointed in you. I mean, you sit here, you write all this extreme horror. You've read The Girl Next Door. And you follow... Skip and Spectre would be very disappointed. David Scow would be very disappointed if he saw you bail out on Len Oddity's sideshow like you did.
Dude, I can write about that.
All your writing heroes who write up and conjure these kinds of things... would be sad.
I can write that stuff. I can't view it.
Well, that's news to me, man. I thought you stayed for the last one.
No.
You got all pale and queasy.
Yeah, I had to walk away, man.
And he wasn't even halfway into the sketch.
I know.
It was only about two or three stunts you lasted.
Dude, I just...
you missed the stapling and the frying pan and the cookie sheets and the drills.
Who got him with the frying pan?
The helper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Richard's Richard's kid.
Yeah, there's 3 fat nerds are here this weekend with us. And Rich from Free Fat Nerds and his wife with the little hat. Because she says she has a little head. Which that opens up a whole new can of worms. I gave a free sub. Well, here's the thing, Walter. You missed this earlier, man. The superheroes are ripped jeans. One of the girls is a vegan girl. And
what?
A vegan girl.
Okay.
And she ordered from the sub place. And they somehow misunderstood grilled cheese as a chicken sandwich.
Wow, I mentioned that one over great.
Yeah. So they got a free sandwich out of the deal, but they didn't want it, so they gave it to me.
Oh, lovely.
And then I gave it
now,
to...
Now, where was said sandwich ordered from?
Some local sub shop.
Was it Wise Guy Sammy's?
I don't think so.
Or
I don't know.
The Undercover Eggplant?
I'm not sure.
Those are the best places in Oneonta to get a sandwich. Well,
because I had already ordered a pizza, I passed that sub down to the helper boy.
Oh, okay. And he's enjoying it right now.
No, he already ate it.
Oh, he's having pizza now. He's hungry.
Now he's eating the pizza.
He's a hungry kid.
No, he's a growing kid.
Yep.
That was an 18-inch large New York-style pizza that we got earlier, Walter.
Wow, it was, and it was nice. It was nice.
It wasn't Chicago pizza there.
Oneonta is home to many fine pizzerias. That's pretty much what mostly a downtown consists of.
And I hear that you
it's
have
bar,
one of the...
bar, pizzeria, pizzeria, bar, pizzeria, bar, strip club, pizzeria, pizzeria, tattoo parlor, pizzeria, pizzeria, bar.
Wow. A lot of pizza.
Yeah. Yep.
So Courtney Gaines from Children of the Corn is here.
He is here. Should we talk to him?
We will at some point this weekend, I think.
Okay. He comes to bring you peace.
Yes, he does. He also comes wearing a Halloween 3 jacket.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's got this custom-made Halloween 3 jacket. It's badass.
Wow. A lot of people would have given him shit for that, but people are now finally discovering the finer points of that film.
Well, we've always known it was a good film.
We knew, but, you know...
Everybody else was an idiot.
Yeah, everyone else...
It doesn't have Michael Myers.
The mainstream horror fans.
Yep.
It's not a Michael Myers movie. It's not good.
That's right. Silver Shamrock.
It's happy, happy Halloween. Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween. Silver Shamrock.
So the UFO paranormal guys, the Conwells, their sign says, they are here.
Like the Wyatt family?
Really? Ooh, kind of like the Wyatt family, maybe.
We're here.
We're here.
Let me in.
The Fiend's kicking ass lately, man.
The Fiend's awesome. I love it. Great gimmick.
I see that Luke Harper's back now, too.
Luke Harper is back in action. Good for him.
So it's the Harper boys. Harper and Rowan is... Wyatt's cronies again?
No, they're not. No, they're their own unit now.
That's a shame.
Why? Let them do their own thing. Let them do something different. Why is it got to be the same thing over and over again?
I like it like that.
They all went the same. I mean, why would Wyatt need helpers now? He's got his own. He's got helpers. He's got that little bunny, and he's got the little goth puppet, and the vulture, the buzzard.
That's true. He does.
He doesn't need Harper and Rowan anymore.
See, that's why you're the wrestling guy, Walter.
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm also mildly buzzed.
I can tell.
Mildly.
Mildly. Because you're a mild guy.
I am a mild guy. I don't drink much, you know, so. I like an occasional beer once in a while, and they had Angry Orchard here, so why not?
That's not beer, that's cider.
So what? Shut up. It's good.
All right, so we're going to sign out for day one of Oneonta Sci-Fi Horror Fest. And come back a little later with some more highlights from the show.
Yes, and we will have a great time.
So, Walt, this has been a rather interesting sci-fi and horror fest.
Yes, the good news is our dates are here, but the bad news is... Well, oh, no, she's not dead. She's right here.
I'm not dead. They're dead, but I'm not dead.
Well, welcome to the NecroCasticon, Jill Whitlow. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Normally when we talk to somebody about Night of the Creeps, it's Jason Lively.
Oh, gosh.
Yep, Jason's been a regular on our show several times.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He's a character.
He is. I love Jason. He's one of my favorite humans.
Now, there's something to be said about this movie with its... long enduring attachment to fans.
Yeah.
And it seems like in recent times it's really come to the forefront. Do you think that's because of your
the cast's prolific convention appearances? Do you think that could be a contributing factor?
Goodness gracious, that's a great question. And I don't really have an answer to that, except for I think it contributes to it because people tell people. And I really do think that, you know, when we all get together, like in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, we had a full-on reunion.
Right.
I mean, everybody was there. They even found Ken, who plays Johnny, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. And it was his first appearance.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And every time that we get together, it is literally like time has not passed. You know, we had that connection from day one, and it just lives on. And I think that people just really enjoy seeing that. And it's kind of like a contagious kind of thing, you know? But the fan following, I think, once I found out about it, you know, when the DVD came out and we all went to Austin, I was in shock that we had this following. I'm like, really?
Huh. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. The movie is basically hailed as like a midnight cult classic.
Absolutely, and I really contribute that to Fred Decker's talent.
Mm-hmm,
you know, he was way before his time.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever met Fred? Because he's so genuine.
Yep.
And, you know, his personality and his quirkiness just came out in Night of the Creeps, and people fell in love with it.
Yep.
And fell in love with him.
Same as they with Monster Squad, another movie that Fred Decker
wrote. Absolutely.
Yep. Has that same quirky, but at the same time, it's like, okay, it's tongue-in-cheek, it's funny, but there's a lot of bad stuff going on right now.
A long-time enduring relationship with the fans. Again, Monster Squad. I don't know, I think Fred had a knack of being able to touch the pulse of the audience.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah, on film and off.
Yep.
You know, or what do they say, on screen and off screen.
Yep.
I think it definitely does contribute to it, you know, like you said, with the fan base. And they're getting younger.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Exactly.
Are you really surprised at the age of your new fans?
I'm shocked. I really am. I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and my youngest fan till this day, 9 years old. And he came up, he was dressed as a cop, a zombie cop, and 9 years old. And he had a creep with him. You know, he actually went online and had a creep made. And he was just so adorable. And his mom and dad were huge fans.
Yep.
And they're showing their children. You know, it's good, clean fun. Yeah, there's a few cuss words. You know, but all in all, it has humor. And it's got a little love story to it.
Yep.
And, you know, it's one of those scary films, zombie, funny, whatever film.
Yep. We have Len Oddity doing a show in the background, so we apologize for any technical difficulties. So
this is a combination Joe Whitlow, Len Oddity interview.
Tom's an engineering and editing wizard. He will filter Len out and make this and
great. Yeah.
Or maybe I'll just leave him in.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, they're getting younger and younger because the parents are having, the young fans are having kids, and they're showing their kids. So hopefully it'll just keep on going, keep on growing.
I showed my kids.
Yeah?
I did, yeah.
How old are they?
They're 12 now. They're twins.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yep, boy and a girl.
My husband has 22-year-old twins.
Oh, okay.
A boy and a girl.
About 10 years I'll be there.
Yeah. God bless you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they met you. They would have met you today, but certain circumstances kept them from coming here.
Oh.
Yeah, they're helping take care of their cousins.
Oh.
So.
Well, someday maybe.
They met Jason though. They did meet Jason.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Cool. Yep. I bet they loved him.
Oh yeah, he's a blast. Yep.
Yeah.
And, say, like Jason, do you have any like crazy drunk Motorhead stories that
Oh, and he told us about that, yeah. So we're a horror and heavy metal podcast.
Yeah.
And a couple years ago, we got to talk to Tawny Katane.
Uh-huh.
You know, she was the girl in the White Snake
video.
I know
where we're going here.
But you're the girl in the Winger video.
The Winger video.
I sure am.
You got to be with Kip. You got to be with Kip.
I did.
Yes. I think Kip is a little more attractive than David Coverdale.
And you know what? It was one of the only times filming that I've been nervous.
Why?
Really?
Oh, God, he was so cute.
You know that was a wig, right?
What?
That was a wig.
I really?
Yeah, he's bald.
What?
Is he? That's news to me.
Back then, he was bald?
Back then, this was like, this was like
no,
the first album,
was
too.
No, he was not.
He didn't have a full head of hair.
Maybe he did back then.
Maybe then he did.
I had almost a full head of hair back then,
well,
too.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, my gosh, don't tell me that. But, yeah, he was quite the hottie. Yep, that was that was really cool to do an MTV video.
Yep.
There's two things in my career that I wanted to do. I wanted to do a Diet Pepsi commercial, and I wanted to do a MTV video.
Yep.
And I did.
And you got to do them.
Yeah.
You've actually had a plethora. You've actually had a good lineup of popular, iconic 80s films in your resume.
Yeah.
Alongside, you know,
TV, too.
TV as well.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Porky's.
Yeah.
All right. Weird Science, you're the perfume girl.
Yeah.
Yes. And Mask with Eric Stoltz and Cher.
Yes.
You were the girl with
Anne-Marie.
Anne-Marie, was that the girl with the horse?
Yes.
Yes, I was with you did the scene with Eric Stoltz and Laura. Was it Laura Dern?
Laura Dern.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
they applauded for that, by the way. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was really funny. Sorry for the pause. But I had tested for the blind girl.
Yes.
And Peter, of course, Laura Dern did it. But Peter said that, and she did a great, phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. I really think that it, you know, kicked off her career.
Yes.
And, but Peter said that it could have ruined mine because I was a little green still. You know, I think I was in L.A. for a year before I got that role.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And he wrote me in. So Anne-Marie was an actor because he said he wanted me in his film.
No kidding.
And I thought that was such a great compliment.
That was a scene where Laura Dern, where Laura Dern shows Eric Stoltz how to ride a horse.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and she introduces me.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a testimony to your work ethic that he wanted you in this film.
I know, right? Yeah.
But then come early 1990s, you decided you're going to be mom.
I did, and it was the greatest decision of my life.
I'm sure it was.
I have two amazing kids that grew up way too fast. So, you know, and I have no regrets. I really don't.
No, you shouldn't, because the career that you had as a younger person has now led to something to give you to do on the weekend.
I know, right? I can go to all these little towns like
Oneonta, New York,
and do some exploring.
So how old were your kids when they learned that you were this actress?
Oh, gosh. Well, I would say probably when it really became, you know, in effect was about middle school for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, they're at that age, they want to kind of impress, you know, like my mommy does this or my daddy does that. And my mommy's better than your mom, you know, type of thing. And so, yeah, they, you know, Brittany's like, well, this is what my mommy did. So it was fun. Yeah. But I was still working then when they were that old or that young. And, you know, I was doing modeling on HSN, and I did a really cool Christian-based film in Orlando that I'm very proud of. And, so I was still kind of working.
Now, let's do a what-if scenario. What if your kids were the young kids that were today that were just discovering your old films, how would you address it with your kids?
How would I address it with them? Not really sure I understand the question.
Well, you've got a there's a new interest in the work that you did.
Yeah.
So, in this modern era, but there was a time period when it was just another movie on the shelf in the video store.
Right.
So now you're more of a celebrity now, I think, than you were then.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think that people really miss the 80s. I really do. And I think that there's a huge connection to 80s films.
Yes.
That they don't have a connection with the films that are made today.
It's a decade with its own sense of identity.
It is. I know, yep. Right? And I would just, you know, my son loves horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Loves them. I mean, Saw was like God. You know? Every single Saw. And Michael Myers. Oh my God.
But you were in a film that blended genres.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And has gone on to become a cult classic on the same level as the Saws and the Halloweens.
Yeah. And I think my son, more so than my daughter, understood. Because he was more like my fans, you know. He did all the video games, you know. He was really into horror films. And I remember bringing him to Spooky Empire in Orlando.
In Orlando, yes.
Yes.
Our good friend and colleague Steve Massa does some of the panels at Spooky Empire.
Yeah, and I'll never forget, first of all, his face when he walked in. It was just like, oh my gosh, he just met heaven. But then I was sitting at my table signing autographs, and he came up to me and he says, "Mom, you are so cool. I am getting so much free stuff because everybody knows who you are."
Not many people's mom is a badass in a prom dress with a shotgun.
I'm getting everything for free. So, I mean, that just won my heart.
Wouldn't it have been great if your son's prom date showed up with a shotgun?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Night of the Creeps cosplay.
And he was wearing a flamethrower?
Oh, there you go. They wouldn't have been able to go to the dance, but
right.
Hey. Props from
my wife always talked about how jealous she was of you because you got to work with Tom Atkins and Jason Lively.
She should be.
Although her and Jason are friends. They actually talk on the phone.
Oh, nice.
And we actually told Jason we were going to be seeing you this weekend.
Oh, cool. Yeah. What do you say? Sorry.
he said
good
nice,
luck
nice
with
things,
that one.
Yeah, he said nice things, of course.
Oh, he
Jason's
better.
Always great, yeah.
Yeah,
he absolutely is.
He's a cool guy. I can't wait to see him.
Well, Jill Whitlow, thank you for joining us on the Necrocasticon.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
So the author panel got delayed a little bit by The Exorcist.
I'll swallow your soul. I'll swallow. Oh, wait, wrong movie.
Yeah. What a wonderful day for an exorcism. Yeah. You'd like that? Intensely. So what'd you think of my reading?
It was sleazy. It was...
It wasn't sleazy. It was a cute little story, the little baby.
It was Lucas Malyron-esque.
No, it was not.
Stop covering up. You're a sleaze writer. You write
no,
smut.
No, I'm not. I do not.
You write smut.
I'm a carnographer.
A carnographer. That's a term for it now.
It's a real term, man.
I know it is.
So, what else is a real term?
What else?
I listened to that new Opeth album that you've been raving over.
Yeah.
I listened to it for like 6 hours one day.
I probably listened to it for a little longer than you, but just not
yeah, because you were in the bathroom.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you got to go, you got to go. And also, I like having my solitude when I'm listening to and reviewing records, so.
I understand that, but again, we've got, you know, Poland Spring bottles full of skip piss.
Ew. Ew. Oh, God.
And I'll not even tell you what Dan did with one.
I'm afraid to find out.
It's not a chocolate milkshake or a Yoo-Hoo in there.
Dan's a survivalist. He lives in the woods for months at a time, so I'm pretty sure his bathroom habits are a little uncleanly.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. So I really dig this Opeth album, man. But here's my thing. And I'm going to say this before you get into your review. This is no secret that we've already, you know, last week we said it's a good album.
But I kept wanting to hear, every time the vocals came in, I wanted to hear Tobias Forge. And I'm not picking on you, but for some reason, this music really, I could hear him singing.
So you're trying to say this is a ghost album in your ways?
It's Opeth's ghost album, yeah.
No. These guys have... All right, well, first off, the album is called... Thank you. This album is called Incauta Venenum, which is Latin for Poison the Tail. It is their 13th record. Also, it is, I guess you could say, the fourth record in Opeth's prog rockish era, which kind of kicked off, if you want to be technical about it, in 2002 with Damnation. That's where... that was the first... clean vocal album without the growls. I mean, as you know, when Opeth first came around in the early 90s, they were they still had a lot of progressive rock elements, but they were straightforward, mostly considered a death metal band, a progressive death metal band. As for this being a ghost album, I'm not picking on you, but that shows your lack of knowledge in regards to this band and the band's history.
Well, okay,
because this band has been sounding like this vein since about 2002.
Full disclosure.
Okay.
There's a lot of music that I never listened to because of its lack of mainstream. And much of it I have learned about since I've met you, Walter.
Right.
That's why, you know, you are the metal side of this show. And I thank you for that.
Right.
And I thank you for exposing me to Opeth.
Well, that's why you need me around, because metal is probably the least mainstream of music genres.
Yes.
All right. I can understand where the ghost elements come from. Ghost is a little more, in my opinion, psychedelic, whereas while you would hear ghosts kind of mimicking the Turtles and the Mamas and the Papas and the Zombies, Opeth borrows heavily from, and he even admits it, he borrows heavily from Deep Purple, Genesis,
yes.
King Crimson. Yes.
I've heard that in there.
Very much. And
you know what else I heard in this goddamn album?
What's that?
The theme to Stranger Things played on bass.
A little bit, yeah. I can understand that, yeah.
The introduction track.
Yep. But this is their fourth album since they've gone, I guess you could say, full prog, which started back in 2011 with Heritage. And it's kind of alienated the fan base, because a lot of the fan base want to hear the death metal growls and all that, and the aggressive blast beats, which you can still hear.
Yeah, they're in there.
Well, not just on this the record. I wouldn't say there's any death metal growls, but Michael still plays the other material live.
Right.
He has not abandoned, Blackwater Park, which is considered a prog metal classic, and actually the masterpiece of Opeth's record collection, from many fans. This album, it seems like with each of the last four albums they've done, which was Heritage, Pale Communion, and Sorceress, they've tried to experiment here and there with different elements you would find in prog rock. This one, I think they go full on experimental. There's a lot more. There's actually a couple songs under. There's one called The Garroter, which is a very swingy type tune. It's got a lot of like a swing rhythm to it. But when they start off this record, they give you this intro, which has that Stranger Things type sounding vibe to it. And then you hear dialogue, like dialogue samples, which is not something you would normally hear in an Opeth song. That's a whole new element for Opeth right there. And it turns out Michael took these samples from a 70s puppet show from Sweden.
Yeah, that was a freaky opening.
I think that's just Michael just trying to be funny.
I immediately began, I hear this opening track on there, and I immediately...
Be edited. Anyways.
$10 Okay.
A lot of the doom metal albums like have that kind of opening too, except it's just all feedback.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little more...
Cleaner.
Cleaner and more well-produced.
Absolutely. And this was produced by Michael. But then we, from the intro, we go to the opening track, Dignity, which Mr. Scott did a reaction video for it. Straightforward. That song was designed to be the opening track for this for an album.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
it's an opening track for a concert, even.
Oh, absolutely. And I believe that's what they are using it for their opener now. That just goes straight balls to the wall. You know, the strong vocals, right from the beginning, and. Like a lot of the songs on this record, it's all over the place. You get a little fast, you get a little aggressive, and then it gets quiet and calm with the acoustic guitars and Michael with his you know, his softer vocals. But speaking of vocals, I honestly think this is Michael Akerfeldt's best vocal work, period, for Opeth's entire work. He is very strong on this record. That strong Justin Hayward influence is there. When you hear him, you think of the same timbre as like Moody Blues.
That's why, again, why I kept wanting to hear Tobias.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same. He's got a very pleasing tone when he sings in a melodic manner.
Well, Michael's been doing this a hell of a lot longer than Tobias has.
I understand that, Walter. I'm just saying.
Opeth's not.
Album's got a little bit of crossover appeal, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, okay. So what I'm saying is you like it because of the appeals. It brings in the same elements that you find in Ghost.
Yes.
Ghost is a little more pop oriented, so where this is a little more prog rock. Because let's be honest, prog rock was not radio friendly. It still isn't, and probably never will be. You will not hear any of these songs on K Rock, whereas you'll hear Ghost. Where you'll hear Danse Macabre and.
Faith.
Rats, yes. Square Hammer.
Square Hammer.
You will not hear Dignity or Heart and Hand, the other track on it.
I don't know. You might hear Dignity.
Dignity is a radio. It's just it's 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
The album is all over the place. It's a standard prog rock, but there's a lot of I feel there's a lot of strong moments in this on this record. I don't get tired of it when I listen to it. I don't skip over tracks. And I'm one of those. I'm not part of that fan base. Where Opeth is very alienated from Opeth's abandonment of growling vocals. I like Michael's clean vocals. Lovelorn Crime is a fantastic ballad. That's a great ballad and very passionate song. The Garrotter is that one I brought up. It has that very night swing vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
The rhythms on it are incredible. Everyone is on their par on their game with this record, and. You get three very big hits with progressive rock this year with albums. You got Devin Townsend with Empath,
yep,
and then you have Tool releasing Fear Inoculum, long awaited, and Opeth with this record. Now here's the other thing though. Opeth did this album twice. There's a English version and
Swedish.
And a Swedish version. Akerfeldt says the Swedish version is the true version of the album. After listening to both, I do have to agree. His vocals sound a little more... the emotion conveyed in his vocals blend a little more into the songs than the English version. Not that the English version is bad. And the reason why they did it, the original intention was to be a Swedish language album only. But after recording it, Michael said he started feeling some insecurities. About, you know, he's like, well, they have a problem with me not doing growls. They might have a problem with me not singing in English now. So, just to
then he's got
to
rewrite the songs in English.
Yeah, just so he went back and re-recorded it and recorded the vocal tracks, obviously, not the music, you know. And great, gave us two albums. Listen to either one. They're both fine records, but according to Michael, if you want the true experience of this record, listen to the Swedish language version because that was the original intention.
All right.
Yeah.
And I have listened to some of the Swedish, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep looking for Muppets. Just kidding.
Muppets.
Already.
Also, I think out of all the prog rock era Opeth records, this one is, I mean, you also have to go back and, I mean, you don't have anything to feed off me because you
have... So the Muppet Band with the Swedish Chef...
Oh, Electric Mayhem, thank you.
Electric Mayhem is the Swedish Chef. Could, in theory... be a Opeth cover band.
They could, possibly.
Or a Ghost cover band, or even ABBA cover band, for that matter.
That's true. And Michael is a huge ABBA fan. Michael will tell you that ABBA is the greatest band in the world.
Well, I'm sure he does.
I would say go on YouTube. You will, if you go on YouTube and look up his stuff, this guy is like an avid record collector. His taste in music is extremely varied. That's why I always thought you would like this band also because of the influences they draw from. I know you're a huge Deep Purple fan.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a huge Blue Oyster Cult fan.
Yeah.
So was Michael Akerfeld.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had this on when I was writing.
Yeah.
This week. And
yeah. This band is also, here's the thing, if there is any musical guest that needs to be on the next season of What We Do in the Shadows, it has to be Opeth.
Yeah.
Also because of Michael's tongue-in-cheek humor.
Oh, yeah, he'd be perfect for
the
vampire band.
Yes, the perfect vampire band. So this is a great record. I actually feel this is the best of their prog rock era. Some people disagree. Some people feel Pale Communion is their strongest point. I like Pale Communion as well. I may have to dig a little deeper back into it so I can reappreciate it. But I'm really hooked on this album. I love it. It's one of my favorites of the year, without a doubt.
All right, now we're going to go check out the podcasting panel now.
Let's go check out the podcasting panel. Actually, we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it. So,
all right.
I think that's going to be its own show. Well, end up being its own show.
It probably will. It probably will be. Yeah. So on that note,
we'll be back later.
Back later.
Welcome to day two at Sci-Fi Horror Fest in the lovely, depressed city of Oneonta, New York.
One horse town.
Yeah. Here in a couple minutes, I'm going to be on the panel for the author's panel here, reading one of my stories. I'm going to read Bad, Bad Boogeyman. It's a new story I got.
Oh, exclusive here at beautiful scenic Oneonta. Tommy Clark reading a story, debuting a story for the first time.
Well, no, it was already on a Stitch Saturday thing. But
well, for the town of Oneonta, it's a debut.
Yes, for Oneonta, it's a debut. And for some of our listeners, it is as well. Saturday morning, it's 39 degrees. I'm wearing shorts and flip-flops.
Why?
Because
I'm bundled in a hoodie with jeans and sneakers. And
yeah, you all closed your pool this morning, too.
Mm-hmm.
How was that, working with that in the nice wetness?
Cold, wet.
Cold and wet.
Everything you get with closing a pool.
Like Skip Sex Life, cold and wet.
Cold and wet, yep.
Yeah. So, I just noticed that Ted Wolf Van Son has a Bigfoot sign over there, a national hide and seek champion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because Bigfoot, as you know, has no ecological impact, so therefore Bigfoot does not live or exist.
He's hiding forever.
Yes, he's hiding forever.
You can seek him all you want, you won't find him.
So today we're going to be doing the podcasting panel. Later on with our friends over at Three Fat Nerds and Horror 607.
That's going to be a clusterfuck, considering there's like, what, six, seven of us?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. There's the horror panel later today that Rich from Three Fat Nerds and Horror 607 is going to be moderating. But we'll be recording that sharing that with you guys.
Richard will be on NecroCasticon, whether he wants to be or not.
Yeah, he's been on there a couple times already on our former show, The Curtain Jerkers.
Yes. That's true. He's Richard has been on with me and Scott on the Curtain Jerkers to do expert analysis on pay-per-views and such.
Why'd you bring him in for expert analysis?
Because, like me and Scott, he's an expert.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes, he is. I learned about mufflers from him.
There you go.
Yeah, that classic story. Google is your friend. Yes. I think I should tell Ted Wolf about my upcoming story with the peg-leg Bigfoot.
So do it.
I think I will.
All right.
When I'm moderating the paranormal panel later today.
Oh, boy. That's going to be fun. I'll have to be there with you. Crowd control.
Yeah, I'm going to need your help on that one.
Yep.
Skip's not here.
Nope, Skip is not here.
Yes. So
not even Skip can save you today.
No, he can't. All right, well, I'm going to go off to do this writer-authors panel. When I come back, you and I will talk about Opeth.
I'll walk around and try and sell a few books for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we're at AuthorCon. I did it again, Walter.
Sci-Fi Horror Fest.
Sci-Fi Horror Fest. Yes. And we are now have the honor of sitting with Courtney Gaines, a.k.a. Malachi, from Children of the Corn.
What up?
A.k.a. Hans Klupik from The Burbs, and a.k.a. the guy who cut in on Crispin Glover and Leah Thompson in Back to the Future.
Jace.
So, with the, I guess there's been a recent resurgence in or attention to Stephen King's properties on the screen. And with you being a veteran of one of those properties,
Are you seeing an increase in demand for you out there now at conventions and whatnot?
Not more than usual, no. But, I mean, yeah, Stephen King's, he's the one who's made the concerted effort, right? He's, like, re-put his stuff out there, and he's also letting people buy stuff for, like, a buck. I know a guy who bought one of his stories talking about having me do it. So maybe that would be the only direct thing I know of right now. But I think that's very cool of him to give stuff to artists, to give them a chance to, you know, use his brand to get something out there. I like that a lot.
Yeah, the adaptation of Mama that came out a couple years ago had the kid from Walking Dead in it.
Yes.
That was one of those $1 deals.
Yeah.
And that was a really good adaptation.
I think it's a great opportunity for someone. I mean, to be able to get, you know, once they've got it, then they got to, like, deliver something cool, but it's a great opportunity.
So now you're at the age where if they refilmed a Children of the Corn, you could play one of the adults.
I'd be R.J. Armstrong getting killed at the gas station. That's probably who I'd be, right?
They did redo Children of the Corn, the sci-fi remake, which slightly different. I mean, it took place in a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't capture. I mean, the one thing about the original film adaptation of Children of the Corn, which Courtney starred in, there was a lot of you were iconic. You were, like, the only redheaded kid there, the creepy redheaded kid in the film with the best lines. You know, I mean, we come to give you peace.
The ultimate redheaded stepchild.
You got that right. yeah, I was supposed to do a cameo in that, and I was actually at a convention in Florida, and it was bad weather, and I couldn't get there on time, and it didn't happen. Same guy that produced the original, Don Borges, is the one who directed that sci-fi one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was, that sci-fi one was much, much closer to the short story.
Right.
It is,
right.
Yep.
That was the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little more of a depressing ending in that one.
Oh, yeah, well, it is.
I think Malachi lived but was eventually going to die in that one, at the ending of that one, I believe.
But you having the bad ending, that was how the short story was written.
Yes.
That the adults don't make
the
it out.
The adults don't survive.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We don't like happy endings.
No. Stephen King's movies aren't big on happy endings. The Mist.
Well, that's the thing about horror. You gotta have that gut punch. What is it that you think stood out about the film adaptation of Children of the Corn that has made it such an enduring property?
That's a good question. I think there's a few things. Number one, I think just the basic premise of teenage angst, especially in the 80s, metal, rock and roll. I think that, you know, teenage angst always wants to kill its parents. They never do, but they want to, right? So there's that. And then I think the things for a low-budget horror film that were really good in that movie, where I think there were some good actors, and I think that the set dressing, set design, all that was really well done. I think the music was really good.
Mm-hmm.
That guy went on to do a ton of more Stephen King stuff, as a matter of fact. And I think those elements, came together nicely, and I think it gave it a lot of production value.
Yeah, it slips my mind. Who directed it?
Fritz Kirsch. He teaches film. He's a head of a film department.
So what did you learn from him?
What did I learn from Fritz? That's an interesting idea. I don't know, actually. What I learned, what I liked about Fritz is that he was really encouraging. Like, you felt like he was in your corner and wanted to see you succeed. And that, for me, as an actor, matters. You want to feel like your director is rooting for you. Not all do. Sometimes you have no idea if they like what you're doing at all, which, you know, we're a little insecure. We want to know we feel like we're heading in the right direction. What I just remember is I would go on set, and I'd be all geeked up in character already, and he'd be talking to me. And I'd be looking at him, hearing everything he says, but I'd be looking at him like I was going to, you know, kill him. And he'd be like, are you okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? I'd be like, yeah, just roll.
Tell us about Ripple Street.
Oh, so that's my band. It's 90s rock, basically. That's pretty accurate. A company called RL Recordings is putting it out right now. It's a three-piece rock band. I play guitar in front of it and write half the music with my bass player. Good stuff, just fun. It's always, music's always been my other creative outlet.
Mm-hmm. Why did you finally decide to start putting the music out now? Is it like me writing books? Is it your midage crisis?
What are you talking about? I'm 25.
Uh-huh, forever.
Forever. it just took that long to get this particular record out. The band when I was, we were on and off playing around L.A. and stuff for like 10 years and finally just put a record together. But I have another CD out called Gaines, 1988 to 1999, and it was with various bands and solo projects. So, you know, I get something together eventually and just put it out there.
Who are some of your primary musical influences?
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I don't think like that when I write. I write from mood. That's what I really write from. Whatever comes out of that mood comes out. But, you know, I've been influenced, you know, from, you know, my brother, you know, listened to rock and roll, from Zeppelin to Sabbath to whatever. But my dad, you know, listened to jazz, and my mom listened to like show tunes, and, you know, growing up in, you know, listening to music as a kid in the 60s and 70s, I mean, there's a lot of influence out there. Listen to, good to me, 50s music. I think the writing, the structure of 50s songs, I think is really good. So, you know, I've listened to a lot of stuff.
So can I safely say that like a Richie Valens is a big influence on you, or a Buddy Holly?
I mean, obviously Buddy Holly is considered a genius, you know, because of what he, you know, a lot of the things he came up with that were kind of groundbreaking. What's that called? The recording, where they record one track and then record another guitar track under that. Yep. People weren't doing that yet. Yep.
Like dubbing.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the guy who directed the Buddy Holly story, Stephen Rash, directed Can't Buy Me Love.
That's right. Which you were in.
Yes, well. Yes. But I was such a fan of that movie. I thought Gary Busey was fantastic, but I thought, you know, it was a really well done film. So I was so happy to get to work with the guy. I couldn't wait to tell him like how big a Buddy Holly fan I was of the movie particularly. But yeah, I mean, that whole era, I think or even like, you know, talking about like, you know, Carol Kane was, you know, big writer in New York before she, you know, got big in the 70s with Tapestry, which that's a fantastic album. You know, great songwriter. Mm-hmm. I mean, great songwriter.
What is it you think about that style of music that allows it to be adapted into so many other genres? Because your genre of rock with Ripple Street is, say, different than Tonic or different than Third Eye Blind. Using the 90s bands as a reference there.
Yeah. So you're asking me the 50s music?
Yeah, what endures about that? What's so good about it?
I think there's a certain, number one, I think there's a certain level of innocence in that, idealistic, you know, like songs about being together forever, and that stuff transfers good to movies, right? You know? But I think it's just, they were really well written. I think that's the thing. I think, you know, 90s, there's some great bands in the 90s, but it's sort of in a capsule of the 90s, and what is that, and how many bands? But I think in the 50s there was a lot of artists that made it through, and the whole Motown sound into the 60s,
oh,
all
yeah.
that, you know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Timeless.
Your turn.
Oh, aside from Children of the Corn and the Burbs, which are considered cult classics, Courtney, you also starred in several other films that I called Walter, 10-year-old Walter sneaks downstairs while his parents are sleeping on a Friday night to watch Cinemax.
Uh-huh.
Hard Bodies.
Skinamax?
Hard Bodies.
Yes.
80s sex comedy.
Skinamax.
Yes.
Well, that was back in the 80s when we didn't have the internet and porn was easily accessible, right? So seeing some titties was a big deal back then.
Yeah. Not that Hard Bodies was a porn, but it was a...
It was along
with like movies like Spring Break and Fraternity Vacation.
Porky's.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. The sexploitation films of the 80s. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you got Annie Bush, you were like, woo, there's 2 seconds of Bush in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's Colors, another one that you were in. I watched it because it had the girl from The Running. Maria Conchita Alonso had a nude scene in it for 2 seconds. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
11 years old fulfilled.
You know, for all the nude scenes that you can have in all those 80s movies, nothing beats Phoebe Cates coming out of the pool in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And she's got clothes on.
I can't argue that point. She was hot.
Who would you have liked to have worked with from that era that you didn't get a chance to?
Actors or producers?
Let's say actor or director.
Director, Alan Parker. Did Mississippi Burning.
Oh, great movie.
Great movie. He did Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, I sort of consider him like a character actor, but as a director, I mean, you know, none of his movies are the same. None of the movies are the same genre. Mm-hmm. But he's like this really effective filmmaker. So he's still, I'm hoping maybe someday it'll still happen, because I just think he's fantastic. That's the number one guy on my list.
What about an actor?
You've
worked with a lot of them, so this is going to be...
Shoot, I'm going to have to think of a name I always blank. the actor in Sex, Lies, and Videotapes.
James Spader?
Spader, man. I would love to work with Spader. I think he's great.
That's a good one, because you were also in Memphis Belle, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, and that's like an all-star cast of young actors from that time.
That's a fair assessment. I mean, that was a big movie to get that year.
Sean Astin, D.B. Sweeney. Who else was in that movie? It was a lot of people.
Billy Zane,
yes.
Was Matthew Broderick?
Tate Donovan, Harry Connick Jr.
Yep.
That's who I'm Harry. Harry. Yeah.
Harry Connick was on the rise as a singer at that point before, right. The dichotomy of as an actor. So a lot of people when they saw him like, they have the singer Harry Connick Jr. is in this
and
film.
Matthew Modine, who I was a big fan of. Yep. So, and Eric Stoltz. I mean, lots of really good people.
Yep.
So what movie do you think it was that for you as an actor gave you the most education?
I guess I'd have to say Children of the Corn because it was my first, right? So, in that way, I had studied acting, but then now you got to go apply it, into the actual medium. So I would have to say that one the most, but it's always a learning process. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is every project's different and every project you have to pull on something else. So you hope to have a big enough toolbox as an actor to draw on things. And I'll give you just like, say, an example. Like, I did one of the first CD-ROM movies, shows ever done, Wing Commander 3. They actually eventually did a movie, but that was the first one that had enough RAM in it to actually have human beings.
Right.
Yep.
So the whole thing was shot on green screen, the entire thing. So actors were really struggling with it, including me, but I actually had a technique, Uta Hagen's imagination stuff, where, because you just see these things called karapis, where these like 8-foot look like lions or something. I actually had technique to visualize that. I wouldn't say I was great at it, but I actually had something to work with. There were a lot of actors who had nothing to work with, so they really felt lost. So.
Hiding behind the
Richard. It's on exorcisms. And at 2 p.m., there will be a podcast panel in there featuring the Necrocast Con and the Three Fenders this week. That'll be a lot of fun, just trust me, we don't know any other way. Then, of course, at 3 o'clock, we have a wonderful lecture with Justin Hardy from Ghostbusters, as well. And of course, at 4 p.m., right in front of his table.
Can't understand a word he's saying. Captain Mumbles. Yep. It's the acoustics in here. How much are the CDs?
10?
Come on, come get one.
And of course, last but certainly not least, the Paranormal panel at 6 p.m. Check out all the vendors and have a great time here at Sci-Fi.
Okay, what were we on? I forgot.
We were talking about craft technique.
Craft technique.
So, as I was saying in Wing Commander, it was all green screen, so you had to really use this imagination technique. But in every project, there you come up against some problem, as it were, and you hope to have something in your toolbox to get there. That's the job, is to get there, whatever that getting there is, right? Whether it's an emotional thing or whatever. So to me you're always learning, and I've studied a lot, different classes and different techniques, because you, like I said, you never know what you're gonna need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Going on that, the two of your two most iconic characters, Malachi and Hans from The Burbs, that I think would that be a very good example of diving into that toolbox, and because they're two very, very different characters. I mean, one's a horror film, the other one's like a horror film with a comedy element, or a comedy with a horror element in it. Would you say that'd be a good example of as far as going into that toolbox?
Well, sure. I mean, the first thing you're talking about is horror drama and a comedy, right? So those are two different things in themselves. But yeah, you're just always trying to find. To me, I call it sort of hitting the bullseye. You're trying to find the bullseye of each character, sort of the essence, sort of the thing. So something very simple with Malachi is, I remember I would get myself into the frame of mind, I thought, as I was preparing for it, and I'd run and I'd look in the mirror, and I was just looking for this certain fire in the eyes, but it has to come from inside, right? Not from outside.
Yeah.
So when I finally saw that, I knew I had arrived, right?
Yep.
With The Burbs, the big, you know, the big thing I, you know, the thing I used was, I used, you know, there's a thing called animal essence work. Like Dustin Hoffman, every character he does, he uses an animal. That's one of his tricks, right, or his things. I don't do it for everything, but for that character, the essence of a scared deer, you know, deer in the headlights.
Yep.
That was like what I worked with. I think if you look at it, you see that. If, if you're looking for it, you go, oh yeah, I totally get that. Because that's what he was, right? He was, he was, the burbs was not his element, right? It's not where he was from, you know? So it's finding those things and then applying them, and hopefully they come through, right?
Did you pick anything up working with Bruce Dern? I mean, somebody with that much of a resume and you guys having a lot of scenes together?
Yes. What I picked up from Bruce is, like, Bruce is pretty fearless. And he's not afraid to try anything. And some of the best things that happened were things he improv, like, you know, the line everybody knows, like, hey, Pinocchio, where are you going? That was just when he saw me in that little outfit, the lederhosen with the hat. He just went with that. And that ended up being this hilarious line. But Bruce was great to me. I really, really appreciated him because, again, you're working. You don't know if what you're doing is good or not. He took it. You know, once he saw that scene, and when I came out the first time getting the mail, and he saw what I did, he came up to me afterward, and he was like, "You know, that was really good work, Hans." You know, and started talking. I mean, he gave me such compliments and such confidence. You know, because he saw that I was doing kind of method work, which he's a method guy, and I'm a I'm a big Rooster fan. I think he's a great actor.
Oh, he's so diverse.
And so for a guy like that to bother to come up to me and tell me, I see you, I see what you're doing, meant the world.
That's awesome. That's such a great actor. He's, like, again, so diverse. And my opinion, he plays the best jerk in movies.
When he's
pretty
good
at it. Main characters, he's hands-on the, one of the best.
I agree. Yep. I agree. I mean, he plays an asshole.
Oh, to the T.
To the T.
My old supermarket manager when I was a boss, when I was working in the grocery, my grocery store days, reminded me so much of Bruce Dern when Bruce Dern was being a jerk in his movies.
Well, Courtney Gaines, thank you very much for joining us on the NecroCasticon. Yes.
All righty, man. Y'all take care.
Ah, Walter. Sci-fi horror con. Wrapping up here. Day two. Fantastic fun time.
Another
here
fun-filled weekend with our friends in Oneonta. Much thank you to Tiffany, Beth, and our good friend Denny for putting this on again, once again, for the third year in a row.
We are actually a sponsor of this thing.
That we are.
So we are happy to be here, and we will continue to support this group for as long as they're doing their thing. So last hour here,
the final hour.
We're breaking down at Sci-Fi Horror
Sci-Fi
Fest.
Sci-Fi Horror Fest. Breaking down. People are getting ready to go home. We just had a great panel with yourself and our dear friend Loren Malloy and Courtney Gaines.
Our new best friend.
Our new best friend. Expertly moderated by our other good friend, Richard, from the Three Fat Nerds podcast.
Absolutely. So, I guess this is the point where we're going to remind you that you can find us on all your social media outlets for the NecroCasticon on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I am Token Bottom Score Tom on Twitter, Tom Clark Author, Tommy Clark on Facebook. What about you, Walter?
You can tweet me on the Twitter at YourWaltBall, and you can find me on Instagram at Smokin_Walt_Ball.
And, of course, the rest of the NecroCasta staff, Mr. Scott Groverson, Mr. Scott Reacts on Twitter.
On YouTube.
Make sure you follow his videos there. Then there's the Sergeant Fury, Dan Roberts, and the Films of Fury, which you can find at all your fine-ass podcasting outlets. Yes.
And fine-ass podcasting outlets.
Yes, and of course our friend Skip Novak from You Gotta Be Kidding.
You can find him in the bathroom.
You can find him in the bathroom now. Yes, just kidding.
Follow the foul odors and smells and splashing water and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, it smells like cigars.
Cigars, fart, and guilt.
Yes, cigars, farts, and guilt. Next week on the show, more author con.
More sci-fi horror fest.
Sci-fi horror fest. I keep author conning it. Oh, whatever. We're having a blast here, and it's been a great time, and we can't wait to do this again.
We've come to bring you peace.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this chapter of the NecroCasticon is
closed.
The NecroCasticon is an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network. Written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groverston, Walter Ball, and Dan Roberts. Music provided by Daniel Edenfield.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows Three Guys with Beards, Jim Moore, Jonathan Maybar, and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igbon,
Brian Keene of The Horror Show, Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosamilia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Biz Ung's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Thank you for coming to the Project Entertainment Network store. Please place your order. A good choice. A t-shirt for The Horror Show with Brian Keene. A Mando Method coffee mug. There's more. A Necrocast Icon hoodie. That's sharp. But why on earth would you want Bizong leggings? Wait. Are you Mr. Frank? The Project Entertainment Network store, stacked with goodies from all your favorite podcasts. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs and more.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.